Welcome to episode 42 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is July 15th, 2012. I am Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is my fellow hitchhiker, James Furlough.
Hey, it's good to be here. Now, I had a tech guy actually come out this week because of last week's whole, like, you know, in and out, things didn't seem to be working correctly. And come to find out, my internet box thing that connects the DSL is on, this means nothing to you, this side of the house, which is not a big deal, except for the fact that it, like, for a month out of the year, it actually gets warm in Oregon, and so the sun hits that box pretty directly. And you remember I had the fan on last Sunday because it was hot? And so basically what the guy was saying is that the connector thingies were old and worn out, I guess, old school style. And it literally, when it gets too hot, he's like, it just stops working intermittently. He's like, they have newer ones where when they break, they break. You're done. No more internet for you. But these ones tend to limp on for a while. And if it's cool out, it works totally fine. So I finally got annoyed with it because it, like, happened again Monday afternoon and Tuesday afternoon and Wednesday afternoon. And I was like, okay, this is bad. The best part was, and this is why you gotta love tech support, I call him up, and I'm like, okay, something's going wrong with the internet. Fix it, basically. He checks the thing, and he's like, oh, yeah, I can see you had intermittent problems in the last 24 hours. I'm like, great, I have them right now. And he goes, well, it looks like there was some work going on nearby, and they finished it, so you should be all good now. I was like, really? Because, like, 20 minutes ago, they just literally finished in the last 20 minutes. All right, cool, you know, weird timing of coincidence, but I'll take it. I hang up the phone, internet dies. Oh, no. Clearly not what this guy thought. And so hop back on the phone again once the internet comes on. And I'm like, okay, I spoke with a guy. He's an idiot. He doesn't know what's going on. Fix this. So he was like, all right, I'll send a tech guy out. And got to take care
of it. That's awesome.
So fingers crossed. It's a little cooler tonight. I got no fan. And I got new connector thingies, so if the hypothesis is right, we should have an error-free show.
Awesome. That is great news. Speaking of the show, this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology in the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. I almost forgot to say that. Before we get into the show, James, a short disclosure that you'd
like
to... I know. Eventually. And it'll be one of those days.
So I work for... it'll be one of those days. One of those days. You'll get me. So I work for Hewlett-Packard when I'm not doing this and other stuff. However, during this podcast, I do not represent HP's opinion, and so I should always say I, and if I say we, I actually meant to say I. And also, I thought it was fun when we had Yancey on last week, and he was like, I work for Target, should I disclose that? So I do this because, I kid you not, because HP's like a ginormous organization. Like, I got this, like, multiple emails where they're like, here is our social media conduct or code of conduct, and here's what you have to do anytime you interact online and talk about or refer to HP.
And
I mean, it was like this 50-page document, which I, like, the first page said exactly what I wanted, which was disclose that you work for HP and that you don't represent them. I was like, all right.
Nice.
I can do that. So, but yeah, it was this huge document. Big deal.
That's ridiculous, 50 pages.
Yeah, someone had a job to keep or something. Who knows? No. What it is, it's lawyer stuff, right? They're just like, they're covering their tails left and right because I theoretically could come along and be like, I represent HP and HP's garbage. Never buy any products because we don't know what we're doing. And they'd be like, whoa, wait, what? So,
Dude, I'm
yeah.
totally taking the recording from the show. I'm just clipping out that sound bite of you saying, I represent HP. Totally garbage. I'm going to put that all over the internet. This guy
Appreciate
works for HP.
it. Yeah, there you go. I just set myself up. But anyways, the lovely
Cool.
world of legal stuff.
Legals, legalese, legalities.
Legalities.
Yeah. Speaking of legalities, if you'd like to follow us on Twitter,
Yeah, I'll get you.
you can go to you can follow me. My handle is at Matthew D. Furlow.
And I am at James Furlough, and my wife is
What's up,
like
Jesse?
sneaking in, feeding my dog my food. So here's what I got for dinner that I won't be eating right now. It's a
Oh, that looks delicious.
yeah, good old Italian
Everybody
food.
who's
We can see her.
listening to
We
this
can see your
show.
face right there. We can still see you. It's awesome. Ah. So this is delicious and looks amazing. Thank you for that. So, good podcast. We'll see you all next week.
Yeah. Okay. Where were we? You want to tweet about that?
Oh man, she was an accomplice. I actually had like a little button. I was like, okay, when the time is right, come in. Let's see if we can distract him. P.S. I
Your
don't think I
turn.
actually said what it was for those listening. It was a what do you call it? Just pasta. Delicious.
Yeah.
It was warm to the touch too, which is nice.
Ooh. Cheese slightly melted, shredded on top.
Yeah. I have
That's
an awesome
awesome.
wife. So, I'm at James Furlough. And I think you were
Thank
talking
you.
about you can find everything at furloughbros.com
Yeah.
and more.
Check it out. Like, literally everything. It's crazy. We put all the articles we talk about and stuff.
That's
Like,
crazy.
you know, if you want to, if you just want, like, one centralized website you can go to and see, like, this is what happened in tech this week. This is something interesting that happened today, and this is what's happening in the future. Go there. It's beautiful.
This is what's happening in the future, just so you know. I like
It's
it.
true, man.
Cool. So,
So.
let's stick with this whole HP thing. I saw this interesting article that is now giving me pop-ups. It was SeekingAlpha.com had it, and they decided to do a little bit of math. So you like this. So for the past 6 years, HP has been buying companies, okay?
Nice.
Approximately $43 billion worth of acquisitions.
Holy
Okay,
cow.
which is a lot of
Now they're
money.
worth like 80 billion?
Not quite. HP is actually worth $39 billion.
Interesting. See, usually you want your value to go up when you buy companies.
Yeah, as a general rule, yes. So basically, HP is worth more parted out, like Pretty Woman style, than as a single big company.
Now let's be completely fair here. 6 years ago was 2006, right? So
Yes.
2005 was like the economy starting to get crazy. 2006, the economy is crazy. 2007, we were in
Very.
like lunatic value mode, right? And then
Uh-huh.
2008, 2009, we have the crash, right? So they are they, I'll be totally honest. That feels a little unfair. I feel like everything was a little bit overvalued for
Except for the
at
fact that
least.
less than a year ago we spent, what was it, $12 billion on autonomy? So that's part of that number.
Yeah, that was a pretty boom.
So,
What does autonomy do again?
stuff.
It's
Big data. It's
they
big
take
data.
pictures and things. Yeah.
Unorganized big data and somehow magically organizes it or something. I don't know.
Hey, man, that's valuable if you can do it.
If you can do it, yeah, which I think they can. I don't know. But anyways, I thought that was yeah, that's I think you would call that bad investment so far, unfortunately. But
That would seem pretty.
they
That's
go in and they
dangerous.
try to
I
talk
well, you
about
know.
like there is hidden value in the different pieces, but what are you gonna do, right? I mean,
Well, yeah.
who knows? I could be
Yeah, you
totally
know, it's
wrong,
one of
right?
those things
In
where.
another 6 years, HP could be worth twice that because you're like, it just takes that long to integrate the services, to see the vision come to fruition, and then boom, you're off and running, and you're
Yeah,
worth tons.
I'll be, yeah.
Like, think YouTube.
I'll bet, you know, exactly. Yeah, usually you don't want the total to be more than your present worth, but hey, it happens sometimes.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the other thing you think about, right? Is like, so that's not saying that those acquisitions are worth $39 billion. It's saying what HP was plus those $43 billion worth of acquisitions is now worth less total. That's bad.
Yeah. I don't know. That is bad.
No, that's bad.
But I keep...
That's like 50% failure. That's bad.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. But I keep getting the feeling of, like, I keep wondering, like, how much of this is the economy's fault, you know? How much of their poor evaluation is the fact that nobody buys computers anymore and, like, that has no value, you know?
That is the, we call that secular versus secular in our vernacular, where secular is, you know, economy, seasonality, that kind of stuff. And then you have secular, which are, these are the big trends happening in the world. And... I mean, that's the big question, right? Okay, you know, for my personal side, you look at printing, and you know, this is public that printing revenue has not been going up like gangbusters, so I can say that. But the question is it because of the economy and people aren't printing as much, or is it because Apple's selling a bazillion iPads and therefore people aren't printing as much?
It's probably just the economy. I think given two or three more years, people will go back to paying 10 cents a sheet for paper instead of buying iPads.
we will see. We will see. We have internal opinions.
That was sarcasm.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I mean, we have... I missed that. This is close to home for me, so I...
I know.
I take these questions very seriously. Because I...
Yeah.
I mean, I represent them, but they definitely pay me money, so I...
Yeah.
I care about where that's coming from. And we have and it's probably a combination of the two. But anyways, that was just a fun little math exercise there that we have literally, we haven't, not that we haven't created value from those, we have literally managed to lose value by bringing them in. It happens.
Yeah. Not to very many people, but it does happen. People who, you know, okay, I'm done making fun of HP for now. anyways, next. Speaking of trying to cut your losses and bring value to something that had lost all of its value, New York City used to be filled, still is filled with payphones, which turns out nobody uses anymore. Can't imagine why.
Weird.
I know.
I was talking to a friend the other day. No, today, actually. And they were saying that her kids saw a telephone booth because they were visiting somewhere, and they were like, "What is that?" And yeah, she's like, "Oh, it's a phone booth. It's got a phone with a cord connected to it." And they were just like, "What? Why?"
Yeah,
that's the dumbest idea I've ever seen. You're like, no. There used to be a time when this was valuable because we didn't all have cell phones everywhere.
I went up to a cabin over 4th of July. And right near the little shop right nearby the cabin, you know what I'm talking about.
I know, Camp Connell. Now
yeah, I was trying to be vague about
is.
The location. Thank
Sorry.
You. they had this old school phone booth with like the closing door and everything. And I was like, oh, I have to try this out. And so like, because it had been literally like 2 decades since I've seen one, so it's kind of dumb. But. Yeah. Anyways, New York City still has a bunch of them for reasons that is beyond New York City. So
it's expensive
trying
to pull them out.
Yeah. So the what they're trying to do is they're trying to upcycle them, as it were.
Okay.
Turn them into something useful. Since they are communication hubs, the big question is what can we do with them to kind of facilitate communication? So government there has decided that they're going to start converting phone booths into Wi-Fis.
Ah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, and they're using these like super military grade Wi-Fi antennas that have like a 300-foot range, handle
Whoa.
Unbelievable numbers of people. Yeah, it's all free Wi-Fi, so it's a pretty big, you know, it's a big pipe. Be able to you know, bring in it to a lot of people. The reason why they're doing this is because basically they have observed that, you know, it's something that we've talked about on the show before, the whole spectrum crunch, as you know, where there's only so much spectrum, and in order to get high bandwidth, you need to, you know, the phone companies can only do so much. So the idea is you'll alleviate some of the 3G, 4G data being used in the city using these Wi-Fis. Definitely, yeah, very cool. And it's funny, it just goes back to what I've always said. Whenever we talk about these conversations, it's like, obviously, if it can't handle the amount of data that we need, the if cellular data can't be, if the amount of the data that we need cannot be satisfied 100% by cellular data, we'll figure something else out. We'll figure out a way to put more data into places. And this is New York City's solution. And this article is pretty interesting because it kind of covered some of the other things that are going on, like AT&T is bringing just free Wi-Fi everywhere they can put it in, you know, like Barnes & Noble, Starbucks,
Their
I
own
believe.
stores, parks.
Yeah, McDonald's does it. You know, they're all over the place. So they're just trying to link the city in Wi-Fi and trying to make the internet a little bit easier for everybody.
I
And
like it.
it sounds like this is a big movement to you know, bigger cities around the world will kind of, around America at least, will probably start going in this direction. San Francisco, high density cities, and trying
Yeah,
to.
really.
And then, you know, and so you've got that on one hand, you've got this cool, like, you know, Wi-Fi stations going on, and then on the other hand, you've got what we were talking about last week, where you have the Google and Microsoft and 500 universities bringing Wi-Fi to rural, you know, areas. Well, pretty soon here, we're all going to have super Wi-Fi or, you know, whatever, wireless internet all over the place. It's an exciting time to be alive.
It is. No, I totally agree. That's very cool, actually. I like it. I will never get it because I don't live in a big town, but that's
No,
okay.
you don't. You're on
That's all
your
right.
own.
Yeah, that's okay. This podcast doesn't pay for it, but that's okay.
Have you even gotten 3G yet for your
Yeah.
phone?
Yeah, I got 3G. We don't have 4G. Not that that's a huge
Right.
surprise. Portland has it. But you know, because they're cool, and they would probably do that whole Wi-Fi thing,
Yeah.
because it makes sense there. But yeah, that's okay. I don't have traffic, so there's that.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, there you go. I have trains. You can hear that in the background. We still got those. Also cool. So I thought this one was interesting. I actually thought this story was Gizmodo, but apparently it's not. Or something. Looks like it was Gizmodo, and then somehow I got linked to something else. I don't know. Let's see what happens here if I click on this link. An NBA star uses. He used an iPad to sign a $100 million contract. Darren Williams. And they have a cool picture of him signing his name on this iPad. It used an app. It's called I don't know. Sign Now is the name of it. And he signed his name on an iPad.
You know, it's one of those things where it's like, it definitely, I feel like this is, it's one of those like weird media stories where it's like, it's got NBA, it's got huge amounts of money, and it has Apple products. So, like, we have to do a media story on this, but it's like, so? That's cool. That's really awesome. I wish I could play basketball and have $100 million contracts and on an iPad.
Yeah, that would be cool. Oh, by the way, I was corrected. Apparently, the sister city of where I live does have 4G. So, I guess I could
Corvallis?
take. Yeah, apparently. So, there you go.
I figure you added to where the cabin was, I could out where you live. It's on now.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So yeah, so who knows? Maybe Wi-Fi with from a telephone booth is just around the corner for me. Could be. So anyways, yeah. So iPad, he's signing it. That's cool. That's all.
That's cool. I like it. Nice. I think
Oh, I'm still up, huh? Okay. So,
what do you say?
I can keep going. Keep going. So, how much do you think it costs to build a Google Nexus 7? Cheater, you already read it, but go ahead anyways.
I didn't read it. I didn't read it. Okay.
So they're selling it
Let me
for
guess. How much does it
$199
cost?
for their lower end
I'm gonna
version.
guess it costs 189.
And their bigger version is $249. What'd you
I'm
say?
gonna guess it costs 189 for the lower vision.
According to somebody, either UBM Tech Insights or IHS iSupply, it's somewhere between 152 and 180 for them to manufacture it.
Nice.
And here's the important part, is that to add the extra gigabytes on their higher end version, it only costs them like $7.50, but they're charging $50 more for it. So their guess is that, yeah, when it's all said and done, they'll probably break even on the low end version, which I think is the 16 gig version. Yeah, it's 16, and then they have 32, and so they'll probably break even on the 16, or they'll make a little bit of money, and that's to cover their costs and that kind of stuff. But where they'll really make the money is when people say, "No, give me the big version. I want the extra memory," and they'll go, "All right, cool. We'll take the $50. Thanks." So what's cool about this
That's
is, besides the fact that they're getting away from the whole like we'll give the stuff away for free model, is if they can actually prove this, this will be one of the first, I guess technically the Kindle, I feel like Amazon loses money on the Kindle, but they don't tell us, so who knows?
yeah.
But I really feel like this could be, one of the first ones where you have a good tablet that is reasonably the bill of materials is a reasonable amount, and they're actually it's a viable product. It'd be kind of cool. Beginning of the low-end tablets.
Yeah, it's not a loss leader. Yeah, it's not going to be a loss leader just to get you to invest in their ecosystem of apps and whatnot, which it is on to some degree.
Yeah.
But Google Play is a big part of this. They want to make money there, but it's not the only reason why they're doing it. And yeah, that's cool that they're probably going to make money. I thought it was interesting. We didn't really talk about this when they announced it, but I definitely thought the whole no expandable memory, and the, was interesting, and they pulled right out of Apple's playbook of we're going to charge for extra storage, and Apple is the most they call Apple the most profitable reseller of flash storage in the world because they charge like $100 for stuff that nobody else charges that much for.
Right.
But it's interesting that Google, definitely looked at Apple and saw that model and said, that works, it makes sense, and people are happy with it. People don't necessarily want or need, the expandable memory, or if they do, they can go with, the Galaxy tab or whatever. They can go somewhere else. But if you want our tablet, this is how it's going to work. And
Yeah.
it definitely is a, oh, that's a fascinating
I think it's cool. I think
change
this is the
there.
beginning of something good for them. And I was reading that they actually so they started shipping, I think it's like today or tomorrow, or not today, but they started shipping. Wow. Does my video look as bad to you as it does to me? I'm like a big fuzzball, 16-bit style. Yeah, technology's cool. Yeah. So, anyways,
16-bit
I think. Thank you. I appreciate that. And that was totally distracting to me, which is awesome as well. Oh yeah, they were saying that. Eric Schmidt was saying that they've always wanted to get into hardware. That's always kind of just been a dream and passion of theirs, and this was one way for them to get there and say we're the phones. And so, Yeah, they're living their dream. They're doing what they want to do. It'll be cool. Competition's always nice.
Yeah, man.
I'm excited to play with one.
Yeah, me too. I had a friend actually. This is crazy, but I had a friend who wanted to know some information about which tablet I recommended, and they brought up the Kindle Fire and
And you laughed at him and said,
and the
"Save me
Nook and
money."
something else. Yeah, basically, I was like, and I think what he really expected me to say was to say, to say, don't get those, get an iPad, get what you want. And I kind of shocked him by saying, look, it sounds like you have $200 to $250 to play with. Wait a week and a half and get a Nexus 7. He was like, a Nexus 7, what is that? And, it's funny, I haven't
Well,
played
they're
with
not
them. Oh,
actually.
by the way,
They're not for sale, are they? I thought they were just going to give them to developers, and then a year later they'd actually sell them.
Nexus 7s?
Yeah, isn't that?
No, they're like
All right.
they're taking pre-orders.
Okay.
Wait a second. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh no, I was thinking of
Nexus
Google Glass. That
7.
was the one where they
I
said
was gonna
developers will get
say
it year later.
the...
We're good, we're good. They just have so many products, it's hard to keep track
Okay,
of all
good.
that
Whew,
stuff.
you're freaking me out.
We're fine.
I know. That's okay. And no, but the cool part is, wow, you're getting blurrier by the minute.
Just wait until I start cutting out. It's gonna be good. Let me check. I don't know. I don't know. Do I sound
Well,
okay?
yeah, you sound good.
Then deal with
This might
it.
be one of those you might want to turn off your videos for a minute, but what was I gonna
I
say?
don't know.
Something profound, I'm sure.
About Google, Nexus 7, when
Google
it's coming out,
Nexus 7.
a year later.
Yeah. Oh, yes. What's it called? Staples. Staples is gonna have them for sales in stores.
Ah, cool.
So, yeah, and they're coming like next week. Like, they're kind of like on a 3 week delay from the announcement. So I'm pretty excited. I'm totally gonna go check one out, play with one, and see what I think, and
Yeah.
I'll
You
report
know,
back.
I will admit, I was at Staples making some copies and some business cards for my new business. I'm officially in business now.
Oh, baby.
Doing property
I can't
rental.
read anything on that,
That's okay.
James.
It's okay. I just wanted to show I had a business card. So while making copies, I did play with an Android tablet. It was made by Toshiba, I think. It was good. It was fine. I liked it. I could have definitely goofed off for many hours on it. It had a cool solitaire game.
Yeah.
I like the animations on it. It was fun.
Yeah, it's
Anyways,
some of those things where,
that's my Staples story.
yeah. Yeah.
They'll also be
Cool.
at Best Buy, Sam's
But.
Club as well, just so you know.
Oh,
Which
really? Oh, cool. Because I don't like
I
actually.
got some Best Buy gift cards. Maybe I'll save up, make it happen.
Oh, baby. I'll go to. Yeah. I kind of like going to Best Buy. I like walking around and not buying anything and just further pushing them further into their grave.
Yeah, I so I, the not the last time I was in Best Buy, but the time before that, I was given a gift card, and I literally spent an hour around like going, "What can I get? What can I get?" It was like a $25 gift card, and then
Yeah.
because Oregon's awesome and it has no sales tax, I bought an iTunes gift card, and
Yeah,
since there's no tax, it was literally just a
that's pretty lame.
switch. Yeah, but that's okay. That's okay.
That's funny.
So, yeah, Best Buy is awesome. I don't know. Everything I do is software related now.
Yeah, and they have a yeah, me too.
So,
That'll come back around. So
let's talk about the big thing that
this
happened
week,
this week.
yeah, this really was the big thing, wasn't it? How many of you guys remember the once vaunted Dig
I
with
do.
two G's? DIGG. Me too. You introduced me to Dig.
You're
And
welcome.
thus have been responsible for at least 1,000 hours a year worth of loss of productivity since that date. Because
You're welcome,
I
world.
started at Dig. Dig kind of led, yeah. Dig led me to. Oh no, maybe I started on StumbleUpon. I can't remember now.
I introduced you to that, I know that. That was definitely worth
Yeah,
that
whatever.
was
You.
hours of your life.
Oh yeah, stumble upon was the worst because because you always had that optimism of whatever came next could actually be interesting. this probably won't be, but it could be. That one, man, that one could keep me awake for. It was like a gambling addiction along with pointless internet browsing. It was terrible. Whereas Dig introduced the whole idea of social competitiveness, and that was that's probably as corrosive as the gambling part of it. And then eventually I've since ended up on Reddit, and I've made the rounds, tried all the different communities. Probably Reddit won't be my last, but we'll see what comes next.
Yeah, for now.
And the reason why this matters, the reason why we like talking about this, is because Dig got sold this week
Yeah.
for they were evaluated. They were evaluated at what was it? It was like $160 million, and they got sold for $200 million. It's pretty. Oh wait, sorry. No, not $200 million. $500,000. That's how much the brand is worth nowadays. yeah. So this is sort of the long and short of it. Dig was at its peak when Kevin Rose was still running the whole thing. They were taking on tons of users. It was valued to $160 million. The reason that people kept trying to buy it, they kept trying to sell it, never could really work out a deal. And then an event happened, and I will get into that. And they started to lose value. Since then, and this is just kind of the nuts and bolts of the sale. Since then, they've sold a couple of pieces. They actually sold. I don't know how you sell this, but they the Washington Post bought the talent, which was so all the engineers and everybody that were working for Reddit or for sorry for Dig. They spent about $12 million in order to buy that team, indentured servants or slaves. I'm not really sure. LinkedIn bought a huge chunk of their intellectual property. That went for over $3 million, and then there was the 500,000 purchase. And basically what they purchased was oh man, I can't remember the company who bought them. It's like BitMag or something.
Beta
They
Mag.
sorry, yes.
Beta
What is it?
Works. Beta Works.
BetaWorks, there we go. BetaWorks paid 500,000 between 750, 500,000 for all the personal data, all your user stuff, and the URL. And so they got the actual brand is what they were purchasing, more or less. Because they don't control the talk technology anymore, now LinkedIn does. And so I they estimate they that it was worth, or that in total Dig went for about $16 million. As it got parted out for everything, and so about a tenth of once of what it was originally evaluated for. And Kevin Rose, the founder dude, he walked away from it a while back, sold a lot of his stock, and he's now sitting pretty. He's got a couple of million in the bank, and working for Google, doing some cool stuff. I don't actually know what he's doing over at Google.
He's in
Just know
their
he's working for
ventures
Google.
group helping Google invest in future companies, which is actually pretty cool.
Yes. So basically, what his job is to identify companies that are gonna raise up and stick around for a long time.
That's his job. He'll be
Seems
fine.
distinctly unqualified for that job, but no. He's a really, really smart guy, and I don't think
Well, so I
so.
think
This is
it's, I
kind of
mean, so you
the
sit
reason I
there.
wanted to bring this up.
Yeah, go. 'Cause.
I'm gonna say, it's unfair. It's unfair to blame it on him because there was a series of events that occurred that happened to Dig, and it's I think one of the cool reasons why
So I
this is a
think
good case
before you even
study
start there, I
for what
mean.
happens to companies. Yep.
So before you even start with that, I mean, it's worth noting, like, the things that they did that were just, amazing. I mean, they were the first ones really to do the whole like dig button thing, and to have those plastered across all of the sites that we would go to with content. You know, before there were no like buttons. There were no tweet buttons, or pin buttons, or, you know, plus buttons. Those didn't exist. They were really the ones who went, dude, we're going to take this thing viral, and this is how we're going to do it. And then, and they were the ones who kind of like proved this concept of Web 2.0, and, you know, they were the poster child of it. And the ones who weren't like, there's a community out there of users, and it doesn't have to be a one-way conversation. They can have a say in the front page of your website, or in what gets published, or, you know, what the reporting is. And again, this was before Facebook had a news feed, when Twitter was still just a little mini experiment. Even design-wise, they were different than the prevailing companies at the time. And I just, I don't know, that's something that is, you know, that's worth noting, that they changed the internet. It's a bummer that they didn't, you know, get the big payout, and, you know, they didn't, you know, and I'm sure you'll go into the events that led to, you know, their downfall. And that's the crazy thing about the internet, right? It's like, you can't just do something great and then go, yep, we're done. You gotta keep moving, and that's not an easy thing to do at all.
It's interesting, and I think this kind of I think it's, you know, just sort of this, you know, tying together this narrative of what happened to Dig, you know, and like you said, yeah, that whole idea of bringing the APIs to people, you know, you wouldn't just post your story, but your story would be part of Dig because it would have a connection, it would have the Dig button, and so they had all these innovative things and ways for people to bring people together. You know, had the commenting system, which was, you know, to have comments apart from the actual story, and, you know, it's a really dynamic commenting system. It was, you know, really powerful, and not to mention the whole being able to dig and bury comments, which I personally think was one of the most brilliant things ever come up with, and I wish I knew who was the person who actually thought that up. I have a feeling that it actually wasn't Dig or Reddit. I have a feeling that they both saw it or saw something very similar somewhere else, and it kind of spurred them both on to come up with that idea of, no, all content on our site is, you can vote on it and you get one vote, and we'll let it not, you know, not necessarily, you know, democratically decide what's interesting and what's not.
Yeah.
But that's sort of, you know, the real challenge is that because the community decides what's interesting, certain types of topics are going to populate to the top. And because because that content is there, it's going to attract certain people, and it's going to keep certain people. And what ends up happening is what Reddit usually refers to as the hive mind, which is this idea of, it's like the site has a mind of its own. It has its own personality. It creates its own group, and nobody controls it. It just is, and there's certain opinions that are solid. And one of the things that Dig's relationship with Apple was always interesting, because it's like pro Apple articles always made it to the front page. Big Apple news always made it to the front page. Mm-hmm. But the comments, the top comment was always something about how horrible Apple is, and how it's just like this terrible company, and everything that's going on, just the worst company ever.
Yeah.
And, you know, mm-hmm. it's just like this classic dichotomy of the people who commented hated Apple, but the people who lurked loved Apple, and so you sort of, you know, and they played with that whole thing, and that just sort of became this, you know, you get this internal community dynamic, I think one of the questions became, you know, how do you monetize a site like this? Obviously, advertising is a big thing.
Yeah.
But you know, I think eventually what changed, and they really wanted to do this powerful thing, and I don't know. So there's pre-Dig 4.0 and post-Dig 4.0, version 4.0. So the one that I actually jumped in on was version 3, really popular, people tended to like it, they, you know, robust, strong community.
Yeah.
And they started to roll out this beta that you could get involved in. And I remember I got invited to, I was one of the early people, with another, 100 million people who got invited to do it early. It was nothing special. And like they really wanted feedback. And I remember like going to it and thinking, this is terrible, and didn't say anything, which is, one of those, like, they kind of get what you deserve on that one, don't you? And because it was difficult to navigate, one of the things I liked about it, liked about Dig and like about Reddit, is this idea of it's, it's, I know, I hear what the community is saying, as opposed to I hear what I'm saying. And what Dig version 4.0 was really about was tailored content. We're going to try to generate communities that people can go to, and or that people can come in. The more you vote, the more you like, the more you do, the better we'll get at giving you tailored content, which is really what Google does and Facebook does nowadays, is
Well,
this whole idea.
it's that interest graph. What are you interested in?
Yeah, exactly. And they're going to say, if something that you are interested in is very interesting, we're going to put that on your front page. And so, the front page of Dig was this like complete total community. This is what the community thinks is interesting, period, point blank. And then with version 4.0, if your front the front page of Dig became your front page, which was what you think is interesting. And then you had to flip.
Well, and it's good to note that the reason why they did that was because they were watching traffic wane on V3. People were just getting tired of moving on to different things. And so they were like, all right, we got to try to revamp this, try to make it happen. And it just didn't
And
work.
what was I gonna say? It was one of those things where the problem is, and it's a problem that Reddit hasn't suffered from yet. But I don't, there's it's interesting reading people's opinions on why they think why they what they think happened to Dig. A lot of people think that it was Facebook and Twitter. Facebook and Twitter started to take off. They were gaining a lot of popularity, and people started spending more and more time on Facebook and Twitter. And what it's funny, as somebody who was in the original version of Facebook, I was I've been playing with Facebook for a really long time, and that's not totally unique. Tons of people were there at the original area, and I think a lot of people would echo in agreement of, yeah, Facebook was cool, and there might have been a time where you'd spend a lot of time looking at pictures of people and communicating, but it was like brief. Like you just don't get obsessed there. You don't resonate there like you would resonate on or and it was that's not fair because I resonate on Facebook for a long time, but it's usually just so that I'm actively there in case there's a notification or somebody tries to actively talk to me. Whereas like Dig, it wasn't just I wouldn't just resonate there. I would be like actively clicking through and going and and commenting, and that to me, and I think that Facebook obviously has a huge amount of traffic, but I think I don't think that Facebook's traffic really drew a huge percentage of Dig's traffic, and same with Twitter. Those are I've always taken those as a little more passive of experiences, whereas Dig for me was a much more active. And maybe I'm unique in that, but I think the reason why they had such a big user base is because people were actively involved in it. And I so I think it's funny what I think happened, and I think can happen to websites. Number one, the hive mind mentality. I think that was difficult. Certain kind of articles get reposted. Certain kinds of content they just get like trapped in this endless cycle of we're just here. The same ideas get echoed. The same opinions populate to the top. And if you disagree, once you've disagreed with it 20 times, you just get tired of it, and you start to go away. You start to slowly move out and move on to something else. And one of the things that Dig had was they had like 10 categories, and that was it. And then and then they had this big moment, and I really think that this was like this is the catastrophe, which was Dig 4.0. Yeah, so you have this sort of thing where you have this hardening of the hive mind. Yeah, the people who didn't really like it were starting to slough off, but the people who agreed with the mentality of the website, the group think, the people who liked Mr. Baby Man, the people who liked Syntax, they were becoming even bigger and more adamant and stronger followers. They were the ones that were becoming really, really big fans of the site, and they were becoming powerful and in the site, you know, and they were the ones that were going to keep it going. And then I think what happens at some point is, or so you change the style, you completely change the site. And number one, you make it more difficult to navigate, which is always horrible, because if I have to learn a new system here, I might as well evaluate other new systems, which is what a lot of people think. And, you know, and if you were somebody who was into 4chan or already familiar with Dig, you might be inclined to, you might be inclined to check those out and spend more time there. And it's like in those first few weeks with Dig 4.0, one of the big things they did is they took away the bury button, which yeah. I just think was that to me is the reason why I left Dig. It's because like, wow. and I actually hung around with Dig 4.0 for probably a month or two, and I would regularly send in complaints saying, "Hey, I want the bury button. Hey, I want the bury button. Hey, I want the bury button." And finally they brought the bury button back, and you'd click on it, and it wouldn't downvote. It wouldn't actually lower the score. And I remember writing them in writing a complaint. Yeah, I remember writing a complaint and having them be like, "Look, the bury button, all it does now is hide the story. It helps tailor you, but yeah, you can't bury anything anymore. It's part of a more complex dynamic count." And I was, and they were like, "It's always been a complex thing. There's never been a 1-to-1 ratio for buries and likes and digs." But I was like, for whatever reason, that just like totally turned me off. I was like, you know what? I'm sick of it. Like, I can't bury things anymore. Like, this is not Facebook. I don't like the fact that I can't dislike things on Facebook. I want my opinion to be known that this is bad. I'm not a huge fan of public shaming. Except in certain cases. I don't bury a lot. I don't downvote a lot. But when I do, it's because I really think that you deserve to know, oh, your opinion is awful and you're a bad person.
Right.
And, okay, maybe that's a little bit powerful.
I'll keep that in mind. You know, one of the things that I think is interesting is, you know, just the way that you're describing the site is, you know, that's the first time that people would talk about it in those terms. Where it's not about the markup and it's not about the design, and it's not necessarily about the service. It was about the community. That was what made it. And honestly, we don't even talk about Facebook that way. You don't talk about Facebook in terms of a community.
Right.
That doesn't exist. And you don't even really with Twitter either. Now, Reddit definitely has that community feel to it, you know, which is why they get compared. But that was just the first one where it was, the site was dependent on users, period.
Right.
And without the users, the site literally, it just didn't work. You know, I mean, it's a weird. The HTML is still there. Yeah, the site still exists, but it just doesn't work.
It's boring. Yeah, there's nothing interesting happening, which is what, you know, Dig became this graveland at that point. You know, one of the big things that happened was people started, as sort of this protest, instead of submitting links to articles, they would submit links to Reddit articles, or Reddit links that had the articles. And there was like a 2-day period where it was like a Dig protest. The users were protesting Dig 4.0 and demanding change, demanding a redirection. And so in protest, every story on the front page of Dig was a link to Reddit. It was just kind
That's
of
awesome.
And it was just
That's
sort
the fun
of this
part
line.
About the community too, is they could do that kind of, you could do that kind of stuff and you could game it, and that was what was always fun about it. You know, you'd see that in the comment systems where people would, you know, those were awesome when someone would start something funny and people would just build and build and build. And you could do that kind of stuff. Dig, we hate you. We're going to mess with your homepage, just so you know.
Right. you know, there was just such a, it was a cool, unique thing that they were doing. And I think what happened was, and I was part of the problem, was people started to check out Reddit. And I really do think that that was like, you know, back in the day, XKCD drew a comic. He drew a comic of the state of the internet, 2010, I think it was.
Yeah.
And Reddit and Dig were these two islands on the internet when, like, all the different landmasses were, like, related to their users.
That was awesome.
And yeah, and Dig and Reddit were these two islands that were like right next to each other, and there were all these boats coming from Dig to Reddit, you know, and just was being drawn, and they were the Dig refugees. And it's funny, like, you know, in this comic, every once in a while on Reddit, something will come up or came up about Dig, and people will be like, I remember when I left Dig, I was a Dig refugee, and it's like this badge that you walk around, yeah, I came from Dig. and you know, it's just like, and it's weird because it's, like you said, it is a community, and you do feel like you're part of it, and you know, and you had these celebrities, literally, these, like, you know, guys like Mr. Baby Man was for Reddit, and now on Dig was Mr. Baby Man. On Reddit, it's like Andrew Smith, 1986, born the same year as me. His name's Andrew Smith. He just put it out there. It's like this anonymous site. It's like the one dude, like, yeah, this is, and he's like one of the power. He's a quote unquote power user. You know, he's just got a tremendous amount of votes, and you know, it submits a lot of good content, comments a lot. And you know, but one of the things that Reddit did differently, is that it's just kind of how they moderate themselves. They describe it as like a theme park, where you have the groundskeepers, who are the guys who run the servers, and they very rarely but occasionally do step in and shut stuff down. But for the most part, the site is actually regulated by the moderators. And the moderators for each subsection, so they've got like, we were talking last week, R Funny and R Picks and all of those are moderated by users within that group. Okay. And then you can create your own subreddit. So if you want to create something that's, you know, somebody this last week created one that was Pretty Girls Ugly Face, and so it was like, these girls, just users, they'll submit the picture of like their normal picture,
I love the internet.
And then the picture of them, like, yeah, of them looking like giving their ugly face. It was pretty funny. It was cute. You know, it was just kind of, it was fun. And it's like this, suddenly this is growing website or this growing subreddit. And those are moderated by people within the group. Moderators are decided on, you know, by the group, and some of the bigger ones, when they bring on new moderators, it's a huge thing. And there have been, like, you know, and so it's one of the things that Reddit does very differently is that all of the moderation, most of the moderation, is left up to the users.
Huh.
And you can unsubscribe or subscribe to different subreddits. So it's like one of the big, you know, one of the big jokes is this idea that they call it a big circle jerk, and they actually have an R circle jerk.
We're clean, okay? We're clean.
I don't know. I'm sorry, but but it's like they have one of the big subreddits is R atheism, and a lot of people. I actually leave it on there just because I think it's interesting to hear what's being said. I tend to subscribe to more than unsubscribe. But a lot of people just get sick and tired of hearing it. Even atheists on the site complain about that subreddit, and they'll just unsubscribe. So if you don't like the content, if you don't like that groupthink mentality that's going on in this particular subreddit, you just unsubscribe. And so instead of leaving the site like people left with Dig, you just leave that section of the site.
Oh, okay. Got it.
You know, and yeah, and so it really kind of it evolved into this very kind of. It has all those benefits that Dig had of the whole idea of memes and the whole idea of like this internal culture and inside jokes and fast moving content, a point system and badges and like all of these different things that made Dig powerful, but they gave a lot more control to the users and kind of allowed them to do what they're going, you know, to control what's interesting and kind of move around that way. And it's funny. I read an article talking about the idea of why Reddit is different, and why what Dig did wrong, and at why Reddit won't suffer the same fate. And as I pretty clearly stated early on in this conversation, I don't think Reddit will be the last site I ever go to. And whereas I'm a big believer that Facebook is going to be around a lot longer. And I think the big reason for that is I really do believe that Reddit is popular right now because of the kind of people that are there. It's just like Dig. Like you said, it's all about the community. If the community leaves, there's nothing left. It's just a ghost town. It's boring. Nobody's there. Nobody's interested. And these sites really, really capitalize on all people's participation. Now, the thing is that it's like with a company...
I was going to say, I wonder, and this is just me, and feel free to totally correct me, but I always picture Dig, and I'll be honest, I don't spend any time on Reddit. I still haven't had that moment of switching, but maybe it's tonight. Who knows? Look for my friend request. Do they even do that? So
yeah, but I'm not going to tell you who I am.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I'll find you. I'll find you.
Sure.
Dude, I know you do like you got like three things that you do, so I won't.
Don't even. What are you gonna say? Because you'll probably guess it right away, and I'll be like, ah!
So anyways, what was I gonna say?
Yeah, it's anonymous, James. Sometimes I swear on Reddit. Okay. We're trying to. This is a clean podcast. We don't want people knowing.
Yeah. So, but I always felt like Dig was a kind of a like a I'm bored. I want to goof off and see what's new site. But maybe Facebook's the same way. And maybe Twitter is too. As opposed to like, oh, I want to find out what the news is going on. That's the way that I use Dig. Was okay. My reader's empty. Where do I go next? Because I'm bored and I'm, right. I don't want to do any work. Oh, I'll go to Dig. Awesome. And, see what they have on the front page, goof off for the half hour, and then, go back to life. And I wonder with, how many people were like that, where it was, it's just a passive, have fun type of thing. They're not dependent on it for news, especially since,
dude.
I mean, it's a stream. You can't, unless you are on it all the time. If you miss a day, you're like, you're done. You're whatever that day was, you're not going to catch it, which maybe that's okay. And Twitter's that way.
Well, it's funny. I think the kind of people that care about catching every news article are on Reddit all the time. And I think the kind of people who don't mind missing an occasional article here or there use it casually and don't mind missing stuff.
So all that to say is... and I don't know the percentage of those types of users, but I'm gonna guess just because of the way humans work, there's a lot more casual users than, intense heavy users.
And, the claim. Sorry.
Well, go ahead and say your claim, because then I'll make my.
I'm gonna say the claim statistically is 9 out of 10 people are not registered users. 9 out of 10 people do not comment or vote on a subject. So only 1% of people who actually click on the link, actually see the link, either vote or make a comment.
Okay, got it. That's not huge. And
no, it's not.
And so what that means is that there's a huge casual user base or ones that's
exactly.
not heavily involved. And I think anytime you have that, it's not necessarily just the hive mind, but I wonder how much of it is I'm bored. I'm looking to be entertained right now. Oh, look, there's something new and shiny over here. Or, in Dig's case, oh, look, you totally messed up my entertainment. I'm moving on.
Right.
Let's try this. I wonder if there's, a future opportunity in, in mobile and local type of stuff. I wonder if it's that. I mean, in some ways, Pinterest has captured that for the ladies.
Pinterest is so Reddit for girls. It's not even funny.
which is fine. So I totally agree with you that it will probably eventually die just because they won't be able to transform fast enough because they don't want to kill what they have. And something else will come along and it will be entertaining for that time and that'll be okay. But... Huh. So that was like that rivaled an Apple discussion, I think.
Yeah.
It's sad to see him go. So I don't even know. Is the site like they're gonna close it down? Like, you know,
I don't,
enjoy it for the next week and you're done and we're turning off the servers?
I believe not. I believe it's, you know, it's still up and running. Clearly. And
well, I'm gonna stop submitting stuff to Dig. I submit this every single podcast is on Dig.
FYI. So we're on episode 42, so we have 42 digs. Is that?
yeah, pretty much. Because I get an automatic dig whenever I submit it. So, yeah.
Which is less for people listening to the show right now. That's not a commentary on the success of the show. There are other opinions we are rather successful. It's a commentary on the current state of Dig. Just so everyone's clear.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just one of those where, bummer. I guess I'll have to learn to type in Reddit or Tumblr from now on, right?
Dude, Tumblr, oh man, the up and coming. It's such a different site. That's such a different system. I don't know. Reddit's cool. Reddit's cool. It's just Dig. It's just Dig. I mean,
which was cool.
Yeah, it's fun, and I don't think it'll last forever. Especially because it's 1% of the user base dictates what's interesting, either through submissions or voting or whatever. And then as soon as you lose, if you were to, for some reason, if 50% of the people, for whatever reason, who actually like participate in curating the data decided to leave, you would just start losing, you know, millions and millions of views a day, as wherever they went, all of the lurkers went with them, all the people who are uninvolved. You know, and then all of a sudden, where would you be? The only difference is that Reddit, I don't think this might be an, I mean, obviously it'd always be great to have this big payday, but they're much more oriented into the, it seems to be internally successful. And I don't know, but they're not like Facebook. They don't develop technologies for other people to use. They are what they are. They're a media center. They're a media website. They really are, in a lot of ways, MySpace. You know, it's a media centric. It's what is our offering? It's our media, and as opposed to Facebook, where their offering is a certain set of technologies, or Google, where their offering is a certain set of technologies that are available to corporate, small business, big business, and the mass of the internet. You know, and they have revenues from all of those things. You know, that's why Google and Facebook are different from Dig, or different from Reddit, and why Reddit is very vulnerable to having their audience leave, crushing the site, you know? And now they've got this huge infrastructure that really requires a massive, massive audience in order to justify, which, you know, that's ultimately what killed Dig, was it wasn't that they lost the site, it was that they built out the server base and the company to support a huge audience, and then the audience went away, and now you're bleeding money, you know? And so, I don't know.
Goodbye, Dig. Goodbye. Yeah. It's sad to see this one go. I mean, like you said, there are certain companies you enjoy to watch die. This is not one of them.
Yeah.
Whoa. That'd be my dog.
This is farewell to Dig.
Yes. Perfect. P.S., by the way, my phone just gave me this message. New photos added from instant upload. Share with your circles. So my phone has been adding the photos on my camera roll to Google Plus for me, so in case I wanted to share them. Wow, he's
nice.
Not giving up. Hence explaining the blurry photo, the picture, and why it is no longer blurry.
Oh, it's funny. I was about to open Google Plus to allow it to start doing
it. Don't do it. Don't.
And I was like, hey, I totally forgot. But yeah, that's exactly what was going on.
Yeah. So don't. Yeah. Google Plus. Gotta love it.
I was
so helpful,
that to
yeah. So we're using Google Plus. I love it. And then there's stuff like that where you're just like, come on.
Come on, guys. Come on, guys.
Be smart enough to realize that I'm in a huddle right now. It's all the same back system. Go, oh, maybe we should hold off on uploading the photos. Because he's using bandwidth. Just putting it out there.
Wow.
I am a dog is
appreciate that,
crazy.
guys.
That would
Little bit.
that actually that would be actually like ridiculously awesome if it were that smart to know that, but because I don't think it can. But anyways, wow, dog is nuts. So let's switch gears. Wow, Dig. He is still going. I wonder who he's defending my place from. I don't know. Let my wife deal with that one. There we go. Oh, there's somebody there.
Okay.
She's talking. Maybe it's someone. I'm selling my truck. I hope that is someone interested in buying it, because that would be beyond awesome. What's going on?
Oh my goodness. Hey everybody.
So
this is awesome.
Matthew, you get to entertain, talk about some stories. I have to go sell something. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
Good luck.
Thank you. I hate it when you do this to me, James. This drives me crazy. All right, everybody. So we're gonna talk about So James usually. So when this sort of thing happens, this has happened before, and he usually gives me absolutely no warning or trying to give me a heads up. Hey, I'm going to have to leave, just as a heads up, be ready to kind of cover the show on your own. And the reason why that's messed up is because most of the articles that I pick are specifically designed to kind of help or to facilitate a conversation. So now I'm at this point where I'm looking through all my stories, trying to figure out, okay, what's something interesting that I just wanted to tell you about that I don't really care if James hears. Unfortunately, my big one that I think would have been interesting to talk about would have been the New York City one doing the Wi-Fi, but you've already heard that one. So, man, this is great, great radio. Maybe I'll just we'll edit this out in post or something. That'll be the right move. So, okay, so this is what we're going to talk about. So Microsoft is changing the Surface chassis design on low yields. This is kind of so we've been talking about the Surface for a while. Kind of discussing what it is that they're doing with this, and different cool technologies. And I'll be honest, there's a certain part of me that's like been really trying hard to make it seem more interesting, not make it seem more interesting, but to be fair to them, and what they're doing. And then there are also things that kind of satisfy my personal interests. And one of the things that, like, where those two things crossed for the Surface discussion was this chassis design. We'd mentioned that one of the things that Microsoft is doing is they're creating deposited aluminum back, or magnesium back, rather, creating this really thin, strong, lightweight material that would allow for a really, nice-looking device. Not necessarily iPad-esque, but, iPad-esque. The iPad has the aluminum back. It's really nice. And from a machine design perspective, just manufacturing on that scale, it's difficult. Plastic's really easy to manufacture. You have one, you have a certain number of molds that are all identical, but you just heat them up and you press them together, you inject plastic into it, and then you pop it out, and it's pretty much just done. Whereas with aluminum or magnesium, whatever, you actually have to cut it out. It's more time-consuming, so you have to go a lot faster when you do the machining, which requires incredibly high-precision machines, really good, well-programmed stuff, well-programmed machines, and a lot of them. And they have to be maintained constantly, cutting edges and whatnot. It's kind of a big deal to do what Apple does with their aluminum chassis, and that's why it's such a big deal and so exciting. And that's the reason I get all into it. And so I was very excited, personally, to see Microsoft kind of going down this road of we're not just going to build good software. we're not just going to partner with OEMs, but we're going to build hardware that has this unique feature to it, good design, things that will feel sturdy, that will survive long times, that look really nice, and use modern, cutting edge machining technology. So you're not just talking about transistors and resistors, but you're talking about the whole package. And so what they're going to do is they're going to have this new way of depositing magnesium, and magnesium flows and molds a lot like plastic. So a lot of times, we mentioned this before, medical companies use it whenever you have like a what looks like a molded part, but it doesn't look like iron. It's usually magnesium. Magnesium's a really good material to use for that. Well, it turns out that Microsoft might have kind of jumped the gun on talking about this cool new way of creating these solid metal backings. Because once they actually, over the last few weeks, they've been doing more and more technology, more and more study, actually looking at manufacturing at scale, and what they found was that nobody, or that nobody really had the manufacturing capabilities to keep up with what the surface could do, or what the surface volumes were going to demand, rather, is what they were looking at. And the chassis just has too low of a yield rate. It doesn't, they don't produce high enough quality at a frequent enough rate to really justify going with that technology. It won't keep up with the numbers. It'll be of numbers of tablets they want to sell and manufacture. It'll be a bottleneck. And so this really kind of ends up in this real weird position for Microsoft, where now they have to change the technology. They're using, it sounds like they're using, it just as a hard coating on the back. So in the end, it'll still look the same. They're not, it's not going to be solid metal though. And it basically, they're just kind of, it's one of those classics of they're not being artisans. They're being, it's cheap. It just feels cheap and knocked off. It's not going to be, it's going to be like plastic coated with magnesium. So it'll look nice. It's like a veneering. Like when you go into your school, and you sit at those desks that are like, they feel like they're made out of plastic, but they're basically just a, particle board with a veneer glued on. That's what this is going to be like with these, with the surface. It's pretty lame. I'm disappointed, as I was really looking forward to, I was just looking forward to what Microsoft is going to be doing with that, and I had really high hopes that the whole product was going to be awesome, not just, it calls into question everything they're doing. They talked about the fact that they had this keyboard, and they had all this, the size and the battery life and whatnot, and they have certain things they really kind of try to pitch as awesome. And if the whole package that was pitched was the final package, yeah, I think it would have been really cool and a compelling product. But I think what you're starting to see is the beginnings of them really, losing what they had, and they just, I don't know. I feel like hopefully this won't be a bad thing for the product overall. Hopefully it'll just be this one piece, but I think that there's a good chance that they might have talked too early and said too much about. Oh my gosh! Thank you for coming back.
I'm not back yet. Just so you know.
What? Can we
Sorry.
put? Can we go on break then? Because I gave one of the worst monologues of my life.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Dude, it was so boring. Like I kept getting distracted, and like you know how like usually like I'll get lost mid-sentence. And just kind of repeat myself. But usually you're there to like say something at that point. Yeah, you weren't there to say something at this point, so I just had to kind of like figure out, oh, what was I saying? It's terrible. Can we go on an intermission?
Thank you.
And we're back. Thanks for holding down the fort, Matthew. Kind of.
You're welcome.
Reddit served well, it sounds like. That's fine.
Yep. I did a little bit of Redditing while James was doing his intermission stuff.
So on Monday, Microsoft announced that they are going to buy Perceptive Pixel Inc.
Yes.
Which is the...
What is that?
They do the big wall touchscreen things. So, like, nice. In all of their concept videos, it sounds like they might finally have, you know, something that they can actually do instead of just CGI-ing. Which is cool. So, although basically what they're going to do is they'll, you know, integrate it into walls, I guess, for like big whiteboards and presentations and
cool
stuff, I guess. Sounds cool. Sounded cooler in my head before I started talking about it, but it's one of those where I think, you know, in five years we'll see something about it.
You know what could be cool? Actually, and I never thought about this, but that as a whiteboard could be pretty neat. Like an actual whiteboard with, like, I don't know why you would need to use ink if it can project stuff. I'm trying to think. Maybe, nope. I just decided that actually wouldn't be that neat. Never mind.
Okay.
Hopefully, it'd be nice to see if, like, Microsoft could incorporate in their corporate offices and stuff and be like, this is what it's useful for. You know, I don't know. That could be cool. Hopefully that's coming. Obviously it's coming. They just bought the company. But, cool.
Yeah. So they did that. Good job.
They did them.
Microsoft.
All right. Well, speaking of Microsoft, Nokia is finished. They're preparing for bankruptcy. This is an interesting article. I read it late, early in the week, so I'd kind of forgotten about it a little bit. But basically, their stock is absolutely plummeting. And we've been really talking about over the last couple of weeks, what's going on over there. Obviously, we think it's getting bad, and they've thought it was bad for a while. Basically, what this article I was reading, though, is they're talking about kind of what happened when Microsoft came in. It's got a section, enter Microsoft, exit Microsoft. Basically, what they did to Nokia with the Lumia 9000s, where they basically said, oh, yeah, by the way, these devices that we just introduced last week, they won't be ready to – they're not available for upgrades in 4 months. And they
Yeah,
9,000 markets. It's just the worst possible thing that could have happened to Nokia at the worst possible moment. But it's like Microsoft doesn't even care. It's really weird. But basically what they're saying is at this point, the company can't survive on their own. They don't have enough money. They have too much debt. They're bleeding too much money. Pretty much the only way that Nokia can survive, it's believed, is if they get some sort of a bailout. And the problem is that the Finnish people, they really don't think are going to want to stomach having Nokia get bailed out, even though they're one of the biggest companies there. They don't agree with a lot of their practices. They were saying Finland tends to be pretty obviously they tend to be a liberal leaning society, and Nokia isn't. So what this article was saying, and they're just saying, like, you know, this company is very much about profits. They're you know, even though it's like this national, you know, it's kind of like the Apple of Finland.
Mm-hmm.
They basically were like, yeah, nobody's gonna have any patience for a bailout at this point.
Wow.
And, yeah, which is interesting. It'll be interesting to see if that's true or not. But you know, because I think if you had asked anybody in America or outside of America in 2008 if we would be willing to stomach a bailout of the auto industry, you'd have this resounding no. And yeah, we did. And so you know, maybe there is time for Nokia, and maybe there will be this sort of like life vest thrown out to them. But at this point, it really looks like Nokia's getting pretty close to that point of no return black hole thing that that RIM is suffering from right now. And
Wow.
yeah, it's crazy. It went from the biggest phone maker in the world by a large Martian to like by a
Did
large
you say
Martian.
Martian?
I think I said Martian. By a large margin. And today they might be having to get ready for bankruptcy in the next year or two.
In some ways, it's like you talked about with Reddit or Dig, even. You know, you build up this infrastructure, this huge infrastructure. It costs money to do it, and you know, if you don't have the customers or you know the users, the ship starts to sink pretty darn fast.
Right, exactly. It's
And they specialized on those low-end cheap phones, and so the margins were tight. And at least that was how I always interpreted it. And you don't have a lot of room for error, you know, and they made some bets and they didn't pay off, and then they got stabbed in the back by Microsoft, and you're just like, ah, I thought we were friends, we're dying now. A2 Microsoft.
Yeah, exactly. So, bad news bears for Nokia.
Happens.
Hopefully, yeah, pretty much. Don't think it's going to be this year. I think we're still only going to have RIM this year. I think it'll be next year.
Okay, all right.
We're it's gonna. I'm already prepping my bets for our special New Year's show.
Death Watch. I love it.
It's one of those things where I don't know why I don't get as excited about Nokia collapsing as I do BlackBerry. Maybe it's because BlackBerry hasn't died yet. And once BlackBerry dies, it'll be like, oh yeah, Nokia.
Well, BlackBerry refuses to admit that they have a problem.
That is, you know
That's.
what? That's what makes it fun. You are absolutely right. It's the fact that they keep getting on stage and say, no, we're still good.
We're
We're still
good.
good. Yeah. That's what makes it fun.
That's. And that was what was fun about Palm. Like, no, we're fine. We got a great business.
No.
We're
Apple's not
fine.
going to come in here and do anything. Yeah, up until
Yeah, no,
the
that's.
last.
Whereas I think Nokia's like, oh boy.
Yeah, you know what? Nokia like openly talks to their stock investors like, "Look, we're drowning. This is horrible. This is like the worst thing that could possibly be happening. It's pretty awful. It's going to take a miracle to save us." And then like every quarter like, "So, miracle didn't happen this quarter." Like, it's not quite enjoyable. It's more just kind of like pitiful. Like, "Oh. Oh. Come on, guys. Have a little hubris. At least make it fun for the rest of us. Don't make it so miserable. I feel bad." They're like the Eeyore of the tech company at this point, or tech industry.
Eeyore. Well, we didn't get a miracle anyways. Might
Exactly.
as well just declare bankruptcy.
So, okay, I
Just
was going to
thought
talk
you'd like
about.
to know.
Exactly.
I could do
So
Eeyore. That's
that's pretty good. That's pretty good. So Microsoft is not there. I'm not even gonna talk about that because I already did, and you weren't here. So
Cool.
listen to the
I'm sure it
podcast if you
was
want to hear about it,
great.
James.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome.
So Apple did something this week and then undid something this week.
Yeah, I don't really understand this one. I don't get what happened here.
I'll tell you what happened. Apple decided that they didn't want to be a part of the EPEAT anymore, which is the
Well,
Electronic Production or Product Environmental Assessment Tool, which is
right.
basically a standard that says, are you environmentally friendly or not?
Right, and the reason for this was
Probably, well,
I know the answer was.
I think the
I know the answer
reason.
to this one.
Okay, tell me the answer.
So it's the answer for it is one of the requirements is recyclability. You need to be able to recycle your devices, and the new MacBook Pro 15-inch Retina display, super their high end, their highest end laptop. It's ultra thin and it's basically put together like a brick. It's really difficult to disassemble, is what was what the initial reviews were. one of the big problems is they couldn't pull the batteries out. And part of the reduction process, part of the recycling process, is you basically grind up the computer, and then you using chemical and different processes, you separate out the valuable chemicals or the valuable materials, so whether it be aluminum or platinum or gold or whatever. But the thing is that when you grind it up, there are certain things you can't grind up because they explode. And that one thing is the battery. So the battery needs to be relatively easy to remove from the device. And up until this point, even though they're like impossible to remove for your average user with a MacBook Pro, they were pretty. If you were taking apart the chassis, they were pretty easy to disassemble and get out of there. Well, they decided to glue them down this time, and so the idea was is basically they didn't want to have to. They didn't want the MacBook Pro Retina displays to be judged by that standard, because they're really pretty much foldable iPads with a full version of OS X.
Yeah, and it sounded like, I mean, in some ways they were trying to go, there's other better ways of measuring it, and we're awesome on those measurements. They're like Energy Star. We are amazing on energy efficiency, and that should count for something, right. And in this standard it doesn't. And it was almost like, so they just pulled everything. We're like, we're going to do our own thing because we're the biggest company in the world, and we can take that world. And, you know, the hope was to start a conversation to say, okay, well, let's create something better. And we're, you know, Apple's going to create their own standard and, you know, measure themselves to it and be awesome at it, of course.
It's weird. We always get top marks.
That's so strange. So they did that, and the world slowly but surely freaked out over it. To the point where, like, one of them was like, San Francisco made the announcement, we are no longer buying Apple products because one of our city requirements is it has to be, you know, EPEAT certified. And
so, well, it's funny. Once San Francisco said that, like, I guess a bunch of other governments were like, yeah, so we totally checked our laws. Turns out we're in the same boat. Sorry, Apple.
Yeah.
we can't buy iPhones anymore.
So there's a letter from Bob Mansfield, who's the senior VP of hardware engineering, the guy who's getting ready to retire.
Oh, bummer.
Says, we recently heard from many loyal Apple customers who were disappointed to learn that we had removed our products from the EPEAT rating system. I recognize that this was a mistake, which is actually pretty cool for him to just be like, boom. Today, all eligible Apple products are back on EPEAT. And then he goes and he'll explain a little bit more about, you know, we try to do good. We do care about the environment. We're not just being jerks about it. We were just trying to find... We didn't think it was the best measurement, and so we dropped it until it was better. But clearly you guys, you know, care. If anything, I hope that it opened up the conversation for them to come in and say, like, dude, we don't like you. We have to use you. Let's get to a point where we're not bashing you anymore.
Right.
So,
one of the interesting things about it. I have a feeling that there was a little bit of a negotiation in the back in some smoke-filled room that we were unaware of, because not only did all eligible products are now part of that, but the MacBook Pro Retina display one, which has no mention of it being, you know, gold certified in any of its documentation, which basically it's like, even though they didn't come out and say it, that's the reason why they decided to pull it, because again, they knew it was going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise, on the website, guess what's gold certified by the
EPEAT?
EPEAT. It's the MacBook Pro Retina display. Everyone's like, how? What? How does it even qualify? Like,
that's awesome.
All the reasons why it doesn't qualify still exist. And basically somebody came out and said, like, if you had like a putty knife and a blow dryer, you can get the glue off. You can like warm the glue up, then use the putty knife and you can pop the batteries out and they don't explode and get acid everywhere. And everyone was still like, the guideline clearly states that it has to be like easily removed with a screw. There's no screws. It's glued in place. How is this even? But I think what happened was Nokia, or Nokia, jeez. I think Apple basically sat down and was like, look, we are not going to be part of this under these circumstances. We're going to make this a huge discussion. It's going to be a pain. We're going to make the government change everything unless you play ball with us on this one. And then we'll be a little more reasonable and discuss this, you know, like changing the standards. And one of the big arguments that people were making, and I think this is a valid argument, is that the MacBook Pro, if it lasts longer and it's less prone to failure, which on average MacBook Pros are, then isn't that more environmentally friendly than a compatible Dell computer that doesn't last as long and the battery cycles don't last as many times? Like, I didn't pick HP there to pick on.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. You know, and that's, which I think is a valid argument, and it's, you know, it's important to pay attention to this stuff, because this isn't like, this is some pretty heinous stuff that they're developing, and they're pretty limited resources. Like, recycling of computers is something that we really do need to, you know, to focus on if we want computer technology to not, like, you know, destroy, you know, entire environments and be sustainable. Being able to recycle them is an important aspect of that. And, you know, it's good to see that Apple, I think Apple legitimately takes it seriously. You know, the aluminum casing isn't just because they look nice, it's because they're recyclable. It's one of the big arguments for why Apple spent the money and thought that was a reasonable way to do that. It's because you can recycle it where you can't recycle plastic. So, I don't know. I think it's, there's a lot that goes into it, and I'm glad to see Apple got their gears engaged again, and everybody's playing nice. But that was an interesting little hiccup.
It was like a hiccup burp.
Yeah, it's a little more than a hiccup. Definitely, I think it counts as a burp.
It was the there's delicious pasta waiting for me, and I haven't eaten dinner yet. That kind.
Yes.
That kind.
I gotcha.
So, Steam is pretty awesome if you're into gaming.
Yes.
I'm not into gaming or something. I don't use Steam. That would be bad, I feel.
Yeah, it would be. And let's talk about it.
They have a new system called Steam Greenlight.
Yes.
It enlists the community to help in picking some of the next games to be released on Steam. Developers post information, screenshots, and videos for their game and seek a critical mass of community support in order to get selected for distribution. Steam Greenlight also helps developers get feedback from potential customers and start creating an active community around their game as early in the development process as they like.
That's cool.
It reminds me of Threadless.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's
which is a website, for those of you who aren't cool, that people submit shirt designs, and then they have the community vote on them, and then they literally hold competitions, and if people are like, I want this one, and they vote it up, they're like, all right, cool, we'll do a run for that shirt. Pretty much guarantees that every single shirt they print sells out, because they know for a fact that it's popular because visitors of the site voted on it and said, I would totally buy this.
Right, and they've done enough studies where they know that a certain percentage of the people, only a certain percentage of the people will actually buy the shirt. And so if you get 100 people to vote and only 40 people are going to buy the shirt, well, then you make 40 shirts. They get up to critical mass of, like, you know, thousands and thousands of voters. Threadless was brilliant. I'm so jealous of the guys that thought of Threadless. It was so simple, it's so brilliant, and the people who are presenting these shirts, they don't have to design any of the shirts. They just, like, they have all these artists that do it, and the artists advertise it because they make money off of it. Man, Threadless is a good idea. I'm so super jealous. I think Greenlight, it's interesting, one of the differences between Greenlight and Threadless is that Threadless, there's a huge capital expense involved in making the shirts.
Right.
You have to buy the shirts, you have to pre-purchase them, you pay for them. And whereas with Greenlight, it's like, I wonder why they are as critical about video games as, like, why don't they just have an indie section where, like, anybody can submit their game? And then, like, have a voting section. What is it? I wonder what it is about what Valve is doing with Steam that makes it, you know, that they're more critical. They're, you know, no, you got to be voted in before we'll even
Well,
dare.
I'm sure that it requires some sort of resources to put it into the system. I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't
Well,
use it.
okay. You know what,
I'm not an
though? I'll be
expert.
honest.
I'm just making commentary because I like the idea.
I do know that Steam can be
We should do that for
have
news. We should just have everyone else submit their news articles, vote on it, and we'll talk about the highest rated articles. Wait, that's Dignation,
a
isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much. Right? It doesn't exist anymore, though, does it? I mean,
Yeah, they're
we're
done.
good.
They're done. We could do it.
Sweet.
Let's
Oh, we'll fill
pivot.
that gap.
We're pivoting.
We'll pivot, yeah. Well, okay. So this is interesting because it turns out that that Steam does have a bandwidth limit, and they can have a distributed denial of service or a DDoS attack. One happened this week on Thursday, brought down Steam because it was the first day of their summer sale.
Wow.
They basically websites such as Reddit and Dig drove so much traffic to Steam that they crashed their servers. And
That's
basically, do you
cool.
know what the, have you ever heard of the Steam Summer Sale?
Oh, yeah. No, not at all.
No, okay, I was gonna say, really? So basically, for those of you like unfamiliar, for whatever reason,
Like
Steam's
me.
like an iTunes. Yeah, Steam is like iTunes for video games. You put it on any computer and you
I think
buy
I've
the
seen
game
it
once you can
once.
download. Yeah, it's cool. You can download your game like any games from like you as soon as you buy the game, you can download it onto any computer. As long as you're logged in, you can play it. If you have like if you buy this physical copy of the game, you just put in your code into Steam, and
That's
now you have
cool.
like a digital version of it. Yeah, it's a cool system. And once a summer, they once a year, they have
Sounds good. Either way.
yeah, I guess those are technically
Just
synonymous.
one summer a year, so once a summer equals once a year. I could do multiplication.
exactly. What was I gonna say?
I don't know.
They have these crazy sales where they put games on like 50 to 75% off discount, and
Wow.
they have like these daily deals. They only last for like 24, 30 hours, which I know is technically not daily. Sort of bugs me, but I guess not that much because it gives you a little more time to
Depends
work up the courage to make
on
that
the
terrible
time
decision.
zone.
Yeah, so I've already bought like 8 games. I don't even play video games.
How
I
much
don't
are
even know
these
what's going
games? Are
on.
they like...
They're like $5. Like,
Oh, all right. Well, that's reasonable.
yeah. But I did buy one I did buy one expensive one because it usually costs $60 and it was on sale for $25. And I've been wanting to buy it for.
Yeah, it is a great thing
Man.
that I don't have Steam. I
It's such a good thing, dude. It's such a good thing. But it's like because they had a
Because you can
city
also
builder.
see when like your other friends are on too, right?
Yeah. Yep. That's
Which is pretty
terrible.
cool.
But yeah. So I bought Worms Reloaded, and it now has multiplayer,
Ah.
online multiplayer. So it's like last night we
I
set
would
up.
love to play
What
with
was it?
you.
Oh, dude, it's awesome. It's great. It's like a really it's quality. I mean, it's the old game. It was one of those things where I went down to our cousin's house last night.
Yeah, I didn't
We
go.
set it up on their big TV. They're like 36, 40-inch TV because I got HDMI out. And so we set up Worms and I've got my little wireless keyboard and mouse and we all just sat there playing Worms on the big screen for hours last night. It was ridiculously fun. And for like $5, you're like, it's $5. It's $5. I can pay $5. And then all of a sudden you're like, yeah, way too many games in. You're like, you know what? We're definitely only 5 days into this 2 week fire sale. I've got to cool my jets here a little bit. But it's pretty cool. It's fun to be part of communities that like get really into it too. Cause Reddit's like just huge, you know, like they talk about it and they have like all these game reviews and stuff and everybody's like foaming at the mouth with excitement. And the big thing for me is it's like now I have to find time to play these games in order to justify buying them. Which is
Well, yeah, but for
not
$5, play it for 2 hours. That's the same as a movie ticket. You're good to go.
what, no, man. I don't know. Where do you go to the movies, dude? It costs to be $15 a movie nowadays.
Ouch.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, yeah. So it's like,
Cost me
it's
$9.
stupid.
So watch out, whatever. So that's
Yeah.
even less time.
I
Play
only
it
have
for
to pay
45
for
minutes, you'll be good to go.
20 minutes and I'm, or yeah, 45 minutes. That's right. 45 minutes and I've justified the price. So yeah, that's a good point. It's fun though. It's cool. It's a cool product
Now, you
and
just got to remember, you don't go to the movies every week.
I actually have been, which
Oh,
is
then you shouldn't be buying
probably,
Steam games.
I know. I don't know
See,
what's going
you
on
have to make
here.
choices here. This is how this
I know.
works.
I know. They've had good movies every week, like all summer long. That's all right.
Dudes,
I
speaking of
already bought my
which.
Dark, I know, Dark Knight. I already bought my tickets. I bought them like 3 weeks ago, 2 months ago. Sorry.
Wow.
Stupid.
I haven't bought
I
mine,
was
but I don't
excited.
have competition because I live in a small town. So,
Yeah.
it's all good.
And I wanted to go see it on IMAX. So.
Yeah, because I heard there's 72 minutes worth of IMAX film, which is the longest ever. And so.
Dude, I saw the IMAX version of The Dark Knight, and it
Which
was just
only
ridiculous,
had
dude. 20 minutes.
20, 30, I heard like 27, 30, something like that. Whatever.
Okay. Yeah, whatever. But it was awesome. It's like the opening sequence. Danny, it's the immensity of what you're looking at is it's huge. It's just the city seems so much bigger. And the cool thing that I really liked is that it wasn't like this awkward moment where it went from like we're in like what's it called? Like
Standard.
standard. Like you couldn't really I at least for me, I didn't realize, oh, there's bars on the screen now from where the screen they do a really good job blending it in with transitions. You
Okay,
just don't
cool.
even realize it, but it's good. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I just that's cool.
Definitely.
Definitely. So you think Amazon's actually gonna bring a smartphone, huh?
They're testing the smartphones.
Whoa.
What?
Oh, well, so does that mean they're actually going to do it, or they're just testing it, messing around with it?
I think they want to. I think it makes a lot of sense from their position right now, because what's the difference between a tablet and a Kindle Fire and a phone? It's a little bit bigger and it, or it's a little bit smaller and it has a phone. I think it'd be like super easy, and they do all their thing. All of their stuff is they make money on content, and the problem is that it's like they've got these tablet. They've realized the same issue that Apple and Google and Microsoft has realized, which is there's definitely advantage in having your content be cross-platform, your apps be cross-platform, and having all these different scales. Then they're just sitting there going, "We don't. It's not good." And I'm sure what they're thinking is, "Let's make it, see if people buy it, and then you'll have this little nice walled garden that works with Amazon." Why the heck not? I don't know. I'm not very surprised by it at all. I think it makes sense. I don't think anybody's gonna buy it because there's no product differentiation. They're just gonna be one more of the masses. The only thing that they got going for them is that they have the Kindle name. But I don't think people are gonna be really drawn to it. Oh.
I don't know. So, P.S. I've been reading on this trusty steed right here,
Your iPhone, for
my
those who
iPhone.
aren't watching.
I've been reading. I've been actually reading with letters, a Kindle book on it. And
Ooh.
yeah, I am here. Here's some interesting stats. You'll think this is funny. I just gotta open it up real quick. I've actually really, really liked it. Which was a surprise. I didn't think I would. But I did. I am 80% of the way done. Page 233 of 260.
Yeah.
But here's the fun part. Location, 4,121 of 5,137. So I only got 1,000 more page flips to go.
Whoa.
So let's see. 30 actual pages is 1,000 page flips. So, you do this, you use your thumb a lot with it on the small screen. But it's not as bad as I
Yeah,
thought it would
I've
be.
noticed that. I read Isaac Asimov's Foundation series on or the first one on my iPod Touch. I didn't think that was that bad. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. I liked it. I liked it. So, I'm going to give you one more story, which I know could be very hard because there's a lot of interesting things.
Jeez.
I know, I
Yeah.
know. But lest we forget, I have
Okay, I got
pasta
the
waiting for me.
dude, I got it. It's this simple. So
It's this
BlackBerry,
simple.
it's the weekly BlackBerry, this week in BlackBerry. We still have to come up with
Wah,
music.
wah, wah.
Yeah, exactly. So BlackBerry decided, or RIM decided, they wanted to come up with this cool campaign. They really wanted to like kind of energize their base, get
Oh,
social use social
no.
media, get people responding. Oh, this is as awesome as it sounds. So RIM hooked up with Twitter, and they did this promoted tweet thing,
Oh,
right? And
no.
basically what it was gonna do is they're gonna promote their tweet, and then they were gonna promote people's responses to their
No.
tweet. Yes. So the tweet that they sent out was the question, fill in the blank, and it was, BlackBerry helps me blank. Is that the response? It turns out that basically what BlackBerry helps people do is it helps them appreciate their iPhone more. I guess to say they were inundated with responses like, BlackBerry helps me realize why my iPhone is awesome. BlackBerry helps me realize why I wish I didn't have a BlackBerry.
BlackBerry helps me with my throwing skills.
Right. And they promoted it. They paid to have those tweets promoted. Oh my gosh. It's like too good to be true. It's too good to be true.
BlackBerry helps me
BlackBerry helps me.
understand that nothing is perfect.
Yeah.
To be patient.
To be patient, right? It's just, oh my gosh. Oh my
My
gosh.
BlackBerry helps her by keeping her papers from flying off her desk.
Oh my gosh. Oh, it's beautiful. That's just like one of those. You guys didn't see that one coming. You really, really didn't see that one coming.
They said they did get
That.
some positive ones, helps me type,
Sure.
helps me with everything. They said it was about 50-50, but oh my gosh. Help Black helps me by laying off 5,000 awesome people that I can hire.
Right. Yeah, that was
Oh.
one of the great ones. Oh. It just is like, but it's one of those things where, it's such a flame war right now
That's
between all these
so
different
awesome.
companies. It's like we tried to be fair and,
I'm
well, geez,
Canadian
I
and
was
I'm
in.
not proud of RIM.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, it
Wow.
just was one of those, that was one of those, really, guys,
But
really,
wasn't that,
guys.
didn't a while ago, like Skittles, they did a Twitter campaign where they were like, if you put the hashtag Skittles, it'll show up on our homepage. And it was not curated. It was like a machine just doing the search. And that was where people were like, all right.
It's time to play ball.
It's like,
Yeah.
oh, Skittles, come on. You didn't see that one coming, really? I mean, I tend to believe that people are fundamentally good and want to do the right thing. Right up until the point where we hit the internet and comments and,
Right. Have you not
complete
seen?
anonymous. You just.
Again. Have you not been part of the internet? Have you not seen what happens when you give people the opportunity to say terrible things online? They say terrible things online.
I mean, even Apple wouldn't. I mean, even though they're a successful company, or Google for that matter, you're like, you don't be that stupid. You don't just let people fill in the blank.
Well, but especially with like Apple, yeah, exactly. Especially like I think Apple and Google, like even if you have this huge fan base, there's an equally aggressive fan base for the other side. I mean,
Yeah.
Google fanboys are just as bad as Apple fanboys, and given the opportunity, they're gonna savagely make fun of the other one. Not to mention, it's like, what did you guys think was gonna happen here? It's just crazy. It's
That's
crazy.
awesome. Oh, you
Oh,
would love
dude, it
it.
was so funny. I was laughing so hard. I was just like,
BlackBerry
that's
helps me
classic,
appreciate
man.
my iPhone. Oh, man. Oh, BlackBerry. That's what makes it fun. They have no clue. They don't. No, everything's fine. Everything is totally fine. We're not sinking. We're not dying at all.
Yep.
Yes,
no,
you are.
People still love
us. Yes, you are.
Yeah. So that's cool.
It is cool. So apparently, tomorrow, a la Monday, for those of you listening to the recorded thing, Microsoft's expected to unveil the next version of Office.
What? Really?
Yeah. Apparently. So that's your expectation. Chances are it will have some sort of touch component to it.
No way. I bought Office 2010 like 2 months ago, and they're going to come out with a new one.
Well, they're going to announce it.
Oh, okay.
This is Microsoft, okay? Just because they tell you about it does not mean anything. They'll be like, and it'll be out next year, but we wanted to give you a preview of all the touch awesomeness. I don't know. There could be something where they're trying to time it with the Surface, because honestly, that's the one thing that could really cause a ripple with the iPad.
Right. It's true.
So,
yeah,
we'll see. It's supposed to be tomorrow. They got some sort of developer conference thingy going on. What's it called? It doesn't matter. It's Microsoft. Yeah, so that'd be cool.
Cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to
it. The cool part about working for a large company like mine is I could be like, so I need to try this out just to, you know, it'll help my job, really.
Right.
And I'd be like, okay, here's the... No, what they actually have is we got a special software depot that we go to, and they just... Pretty much everything there we can download and use for work, so...
I'm jealous.
It's pretty freaking awesome, actually. I think I need Adobe Premiere to do my job. Okay. Here's the download link. Thank you. Actually, I take that back. I need the entire Creative Suite. Here's the link.
Awesome.
Pretty darn awesome. HP's a great company. See?
They are a good company.
They are. They're still finding their way. Not still, but yeah, still.
Still. They are still.
Yeah. So there was more during the week, but honestly, I got totally distracted trying to sell my vehicle, because quite honestly, I would make more off the vehicle than I do off the podcast, so priorities. What can I say? I mean, I'll be honest about it.
Sorry.
I'll tell the truth. You're my friend. I enjoy our fans. This is volunteer work, and so
that's a good point. You make a compelling argument.
So there it is.
Well, it was like, I think it was like 5 minutes top that we didn't talk.
Honestly, if you're listening to this, you'll be like, I don't know what he's talking about, because there was no break. I'll be like,
yeah,
that's true. So I might cut this out too. No, I won't. I don't do that. That would require too much effort.
I would say I think it's funny to talk about cutting things out in post and then never cutting them out in post.
That's right. I did last week. I got
Clearly,
rid of all the dead space last week. Because that was pretty bad. Hey, we survived this week.
That's different.
So that's cool, right?
Woo! I think we figured out the problem.
Well, it wasn't as hot. We gotta wait until it gets hot again, I guess. All right. Anyways, anything else?
Yeah. So you mean next year?
Yeah. Yeah. Really.
No. Once per summer.
Okay. Cool. Nothing on my end. So everybody, thank you for joining us, for putting up with us. We truly appreciate it. My name is James Furlow, and what was the intro you used this time? I wasn't even paying attention.
I said my fellow hitchhiker.
My fellow hitchhiker going along for a ride.
Did you get that one, by the way? I mean, this is really for the end of it. It's our 42nd episode. It's a tip of the hat to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
That was deep. That was deep.
I know, man.
Like Jurassic Park and the
Deep Thought was the name of the computer that came up with 42 as the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
See, I knew that. That's why I said that.
I don't know, man.
Of course.
Internet high five.
Can I admit that I never actually read that book?
Yes, you can. I
Okay.
knew. That's why I kind of was dragging. I didn't expect you to get it. That's why I was like, I figured you weren't even paying attention during the intro because I was like, you're not even gonna ask about that one. You're just gonna let that one hang there. Like, okay, cool.
Well, I was all excited about my story, so I cared about what
know.
I had to say, so I wasn't listening to you. See how that works?
I do see how that works.
All right, this was a super long close. Thanks for explaining the beginning part. I'm glad I brought it up. Oh, man. So, anyways, for reals this time, everybody, we will talk next time.
Whoa.
Whoa.
How did you do that?
I don't know. I just pressed the end broadcast, and normally it quits it. But this time it didn't.
Cool.
I love Google. I mean, they do some infuriating things, and mostly it's because my expectations are super high because they're awesome.
Yep.
And then they become normal, and you're like, I
Oh,
hate you.
come on, guys. Yeah.
But then they do this.
Keep up.
Where
Yeah.
they don't, they go like, actually, it's annoying when you people have to recall because you ended a broadcast. So we're just gonna end the broadcast and let the video keep going. You're like, brilliant. That's what I actually wanted. I love you guys.